Now look, just for a change, here's another version of Vivaldi's Winterlago, played for us playfully by Red Priest. Now, that was Red Priest's version of Vivaldi's Winterlargo, reminding us how potentially monotonous this piece can be. But it pushes all our attention onto the dancing violin. And anyway, there is something monotonous about dripping winter days, isn't it? Well, here you are at Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city, and I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and I invite you to attend as we sit here in this decorated studio. I can't tell you how much glitzy tinsel and sort of purple balls and gold stars and things. And look, there's a few little stockings hanging from the window, and it gives us all a very festive feel. We hope we can make your Evening Under Lamplight very festive tonight. You can reach me and hear the archives of the show, as you know, at momentsunderlamplight.co.uk, and you can reach me at RLA at momentsunderlamplight.co.uk, or they tell me, I don't get email very often at this address, but if you send it to lamplight@cambridge105.fm, I'll hear you. And reply, of course. Now, I have two special guests in the studio tonight. First of all, on my to the right of me, I think he is. God, I shouldn't have done that. Andrew Abey, who would be embarrassed if I praised him as highly as I'd want to, and he's a guest coming down from Liverpool, and hello. He can say hello. Yes, his mic's on.
Hi. How are you doing?
There he is. Who, are you asking me or them? They're not going to answer you.
I know. I was just trying to see which mic was the right one.
That's the right one.
It's this one.
I told you were green.
Okay.
And our other guest is Biff Roxby, sound engineer, casting his knowledgeable eye on the equipment. And actually, he's very impressed. at least he says so, but I think he is really impressed with some, at least some, much of the equipment that he's seen in our studio, and he knows what he's talking about.
Good evening.
You've heard... Well, I haven't finished introducing you.
Oh. Well,
you've heard,
please continue.
I was going to say, you've heard his trombone on several tracks we've played by Louis Barabbas and the Bedlam Six. We play them, and I always say that we've got the excellent Biff Roxby on trombone.
Oh, thank you.
And you're a radio presenter from Manchester, so you know what you're doing here. I'll keep their mics on so they can join in when they can. And I'll try to let go and share the airwaves. I'm sorry, this isn't going to be a Christmas show. There might be a little New Year's song later on. It might not be joyful. We'll have to see. I mean, I don't know anything happy, do I? Just a little irony is the way we pick ourselves up around here, right? Okay, remember Dante. We left Dante on the edge of the cliff at the end of the Circle of Violence. It's a steep cliff. A long way down to where the violent, to where the fraud people are being punished with the sort of life that they have actually asked for. The problem, though, for Dante and Virgil is how to get down that steep cliff. The last cliff they encountered, from the sins of incontinence to the sins of violence, well, there they could climb down because there had been a landslide after Christ's descent into hell, and they could just scramble down the rocks. But there's no landslide here, just a sheer drop. So Virgil asked Dante for his rope belt. Excuse me, could I have your belt? What the hell are you talking about? Virgil takes the rope and he throws it over the cliff.
Cheers.
It's like, that was my best piece of rope, you know?
Now my trousers won't stay out.
It's a kind of bait. And up comes Geryon, swimming up through the air to them. What's this all about? Geryon will be the figure that we focus on tonight. There are a lot of different opinions about what this belt's all about. Literally, it's the rope is a belt to hold together, not his trousers, they didn't have them then, but his robes, you see, to keep him girded, ready for action, as we might say. Just like you tighten the belt before engaging in action, girding your loins, as the Bible puts it. But what are its symbolic meanings? Is Virgil asking Dante to let go of his sense of his own power to control things? Don't try to take action here with the people of fraud. Just watch and learn and rely on protection from higher up. Is this because you can't fight fraud? You can only be aware of it, and that's all it takes to make you immune to it? In any case, it's an effective lure for this emblem of fraud. Ah, here's someone who's vulnerable. Let me rush up and get him. And he does rush up from out of the deep darkness. Dante says he's like a palombaro, some sailor who's just gone overboard to disentangle the anchor. Maybe the anchor's been caught in something anyway, under the water. He's disentangled it. Up comes this shape, most like a man's, who, having plunged to loose the anchor caught fast in a reef or something other hidden in the sea, now rises, reaching upward and drawing in his feet. And that's the end of the canto. Now what? We have to wait for the next canto to find out. Okay, next canto. It begins with Virgil announcing the presence of Geryon, and here's a few lines in Italian, because they're so lovely. Ecco la fiera con la coda augusta che passa il monte e rompe i muri e l'armi. Ecco colei che tutto il mondo appuzza. Behold the beast with pointed tail that leaps past mountains, shatters walls and weapons. Behold the one whose stench afflicts the world. Well, that's fraud for you. You'll find it everywhere, all over the world. There are no barriers to keep fraud away. It's like a stench. It can seep in everywhere. Okay, but what does this creature look like? And the way he looks would tell us something about his character, and then about the character of fraud. First of all, he has a beautiful face, like a righteous man, benevolent, friendly, the kind of person you'd feel safe to run to when you're in trouble, the kind of person who would always be there to help you. That's his face. But he's another one of those hybrid creatures we've been meeting, part human, part animal. All the rest of this creature was a serpent, or perhaps better, some kind of dragon, not a snake. This creature has arms. Well, sort of. Their forepaws, maybe. Their forepaws are all hairy up to the armpits. His torso, his back, his chest, his sides are painted, tattooed, we might say, with rings and curlicues. That kind of design with ornate patterns of lines in intertwining circles, in imitation perhaps of the stems and leaves of climbing plants, twisting all around themselves in intricate, repeating patterns. Think of an ornately patterned Turkish rug. These designs, Dante says, are better even than those. In other words, there's nothing straight about him. He speaks, as they used to say, with forked tongue, double talk to confuse us and trap us. And I think we have to picture this as beautiful. It's attractive, though in a very seductive way. You can get lost in that attraction. And when you get close enough, there's his tail, lashing out in the void, twisting up its forked and venomed tip, just waiting for the right moment to sting you and make you his. That's the appearance of Geryon. We'll come back to him in a minute, but we're taking next a little break for a kind of alluring, evil triptych. Three songs that might fit in some way the description of Geryon. And we're going to start with She's a Rainbow with the Rolling Stones from their album. You know the Satanic Majesty's Request?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's one of the Stones' psychedelic albums. It has an odd kind of false improvisational beginning, which people thought was pretty cool in those days.
It's still cool now.
Right, okay. Well, that's improvisational radio for you, too. Okay. Well, I'm not so sure it's... Well, we'll see. I mean, you don't want to overdo it anyway. She's like a rainbow. She comes in colors everywhere, like Geryon. And here she is.
All right, then, now, let's play the first time I've played the game. I'll tell you how to do it. Now, all you've got to do, like, is when the whistle's playing, I want you to get one spin on the other ball. Any prize, take what you like. Well, winner, well, prize. The pick of the stone. Are you all ready?
Dressed in blue, see the sky.
let's stop that now. By Rolling Stones. That was She's Like a Rainbow. And we got the point, I think, didn't we? Okay, song number two. Poison Ivy by the Coasters. Well, these songs just come to me and I then incorporate them into the show. It's a 1959 song. It's very, very old. Even for my tastes, I guess. And these guys here know Poison Ivy. It's a classic song, is it?
Yeah. It's been covered a few times, I think, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been covered by an awful lot of people. Yeah. I saw that, yeah. I see, but you know, the Coasters are the guys.
The original and best.
Mm. Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore. Now look, what's the point about Poison Ivy? Well, she comes on like a rose. Right, that's the prettiness. And everybody knows she'll get you in Dutch. You know that, in Dutch? Okay. That's an American... I guess it means in trouble. It's a kind of, you know, all those Dutch people that get you in trouble. So many of the American slang terms are ethnic slurs. Yeah. I had a student who once very casually, without even being aware what she was doing, she was from Texas, and she was talking about something, and she said, and he Jewed me for about $5.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that in the UK.
Okay, but it's harmless as long as it's a dead metaphor, but it's just bad language because it's dead. Anyway, she'll get you in Dutch. You can look, but you better not touch. She's pretty as a daisy, see? She's very attractive. But look out, man, she's crazy. She'll really do you in if you let her get under your skin, all those tattoos. And then this great, do you call this a bridge? I don't know. Measles make you bumpy, and mumps will make you lumpy, and chicken pox will make you jump and twitch. A common cold will cool you. I've got a common cold. I've got to cool off. A common cold will cool you, but whooping cough will fool you. But poison ivy, Lord, will make you itch. I don't know why itching is so much worse than those other things, but it appears to be. You're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion. You'll be scratching like a hound the minute you start to mess around.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in Dutch. Now you can look, but you better not touch. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a creeping around. She's pretty as a daisy, but look, I mean, she's crazy. She really do you in. Now if you let her get under your skin, poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Now late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes creeping around. Measles will make you bumpy, and mumps will make you lumpy, and chicken pox will make you jump and twitch. A common cold will fool ya, and whooping cough will cool ya. But poison ivy, Lord, will make you itch. You're gonna need an ocean of calamine lotion. You'll be scratching like a hound the minute you start to mess around. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Poison ivy. To mess around. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Poison ivy, yeah, yeah. Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a creeping around. La 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 la. 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 La 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 la.
That was the Coasters. It says on my little note sheet, Coaster. It's not a coaster. It's the Coasters, and it's Poison Ivy. According to Jerry Lieber, who wrote the song, pure and simple, Poison Ivy is a metaphor for sexually transmitted disease. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot, but that's not how we're using it here, is it? We're using it as a metaphor for fraud. How about that? Anything you want to say about the music here?
I really like the Coasters. That doesn't sound like it was 1959, does it?
No, it's got a sort of very universal feel. This
is what's called bullshit, people. They've said nothing specific yet, right? That's how you bullshit. Yeah, so it's got the great sound from it.
Hey, 60s garage rock sound is like a precursor to...
That's it.
The Count Five and other bands like that.
These guys know so much more than I do.
I know nothing like this. I can tell you I like it.
Good. That's the usual cliche.
Yeah.
Great vibrato guitar notes.
Now for a really good song. Okay. The song's called He's Evil, and it's by the Kinks, and it's from their Preservation Part 2 album. It was a kind of a rock opera in which the country is controlled by somebody called Flash, who's a slick businessman who likes to buy up buildings and redo them and do people out and throw people out, and he has no concern for anybody.
Sounds familiar.
Well, that's right. That's right. And that's the situation in England. This is an album from the mid-70s. And Ray Davies saw this as the situation in England then. But then up comes the man for change it all, named Mr. Black, who comes on like a clergyman, and he's got high moral principles. But he ends up controlling the whole place and depersonalizing everybody, making them into a kind of uniform red Chinese army, that sort of thing. And so they're both bad, you see. This song is sung at a political rally by Mr. Black, and he is attacking Flash, by alerting to people that Flash is evil and don't believe him and take my side and give me the power. This song goes out to all those who voted for Donald Trump. Though there are not many, I think, in our community of listeners. Can you have a song going out to someone who's not going to be listening? Yes, of course.
Yes.
I'm going to read you the lyrics because that'll help you appreciate the song and because they're worth thinking about. He comes on smooth, cool, and kind, but he wants your body, not your mind. He's got style, personality, but he's the devil in reality. He'll make you laugh, make you smile, and make you feel good for a while. Wicked smile, decadent grin, he likes schoolgirls, nuns, and virgins. His skin is soft, but his mind is hard. He'll lead you on, then he'll tear you apart. He'll treat you rough, and he will make you cry, and you will kiss sweet innocence goodbye. And once you're in, there'll be no getting out. That's terrible. We don't want to think about that. Once you're in, there'll be no getting out, and that's fraud. So look out. Look out. Look out. Look out. He's evil. And then it goes on. He's evil. He's evil. He's evil. He's evil. He's evil. He's got wit, he's got charm, but when he gets rough, he'll break your arm. He's got taste, manners, and grace, but when he gets tough, he'll slit your face. He'll buy you jewels, expensive clothes, then his mind will go and he'll bust your nose. Interesting lyrics here. This is the Cray Brothers, I suppose, he's got in mind. He's a joker and a clown. Uh-huh, there's a nice one. But he'll pervert you and drag you down. He comes on smooth, cool, and kind, but he wants your body, not your mind. He is just the devil in disguise. He'll drag you down, and he'll make you cry, and once you're in, there'll be no getting out. So, look out. And it goes on at the end, a kind of very hypnotic, he's evil, he's evil, he's evil, he's evil. Okay, and now, so it's time to listen to the song. You ready? You don't know the King's Preservation album?
I don't know.
No. It's really the Kinks at their, in many ways, at their best, they're the strongest. It's got so many interesting things to it. So let's listen.
Thank you.
There, I let it play to the end, that extended hypnotic ending, disorienting us, luring us into the evil. Now, Andrew has a little poem that he thought that fits in this, so I'll let him read it.
Cool. I just thought of this while listening to that song, but it's by Michael Rosen, and it's called Fascism, I Sometimes Fear. I sometimes fear that people think that fascism arrives in fancy dress, worn by grotesques and monsters as played out in endless reruns of the Nazis. Fascism arrives as your friend. It will restore your honour, make you feel proud, protect your house, give you a job, clean up the neighbourhood, remind you of how great you once were, clean out the venal and the corrupt, remove anything you feel is unlike you. It doesn't walk in saying, our programme means militias, mass imprisonments, transportations, war and persecution. There we are.
There we are. There we are. Take it to heart. Michael Rosen's always worth listening to. And now let's have some comments about the music. The Kinks, remember? We had the Kinks. As soon as it started playing, Biff said, oh, well, obviously that's the Kinks.
I don't know. There's just something about Ray Davies' writing and the way that they play as a band. There's a very particular piano sound which you can hear on any of their songs with piano on it, and the piano that starts with the electric piano is just, that's the Kinks piano sound straight away.
Wonderful. That's great. Well, this is one of the songs that developed that sound, I suppose. This is them at their really peak. But wait, into whose evil is this song luring us? You see, Mr. Black is saying that Flash is evil, but he's an even worse fraudster than Flash. At least Flash is obviously corrupt, but Mr. Black is appealing to people's desire to clear up Flash's corruption.
Let's clear out the swamp.
Yes, exactly.
Rain the swamp.
Well, he wants to enslave the people, we find out later in the little rock opera, into a kind of conformist society with no personality. That was a great fear in the 70s. But you don't get rid of corruption by getting rid of human nature. So the song reminds us that we must first watch out for Flash or Trump's evil frauds, but also the fraudulent appeals of the opposition who take a high moral ground. Just watch out for that too. It's all around. Remember that fraud has the stench that goes all around the world. Well, that was our little triple play of songs that might describe Gerion's fraudulence. And this is Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And it's time for our usual station identification. And you'll especially like this. Here it comes.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
Thank you, Neil Henry. You like that?
Yeah.
he came up with that a year ago in this very studio. Yeah. When we had the three of us, the Abrahamsonettes. All right, look. Before we finish with the actual appearance of Gerion, we have to look at one more detail that Dante gives us. He says that the intricate pattern of swirling lines and colors on Gerion's body were better even than on the tapestry woven by Arachne. Let's stop for a minute to consider Arachne. You remember Arachne? She came from, this is a Greek myth, okay? She came from a poor background. She had to work her own way up. Her parents were very poor. But she had talent, man. She was a great weaver. Weaving was the most important art form women engaged in. It was useful and decorative, elaborate and complex. It needed great skill and great dexterity and great imagination. You sit at a huge wooden loom, weaving the threads back and forth to produce a pattern or a picture. Arachne was very proud of her skill, and people came from all around to see her at work and to see the work too, of course. But she was a celebrity, and it went to her head. Athena was the goddess of weaving, the one who bestowed the talent upon certain women. You can see how this works. All of our talents are given to us. That's not us. We are separate from our talents. They're given to us. A talent is that old word that means a coin. It's given to you to use. our ego wants to take credit, but these are only borrowed gifts that we give back to others. First, in gratitude for having been given the gift in the form of our talent, and second, in using the talent to produce good things for others. But Arachne denied that this was any divine gift. Are you kidding? I don't owe anything to that goddess. I did it all myself. Now look, you can see how a poor girl who worked her way up might say this, but still it was wrong. She confused her true self with the skills she had. Well, she certainly got a lot of ego satisfaction, fame all around the region, people flocking to see her, but of course Athena heard of this. She came to Arachne in disguise. "Listen to me," she said. "I'm old and experienced. You can enjoy all the celebrity status your talents have earned you. That's all right, but it would be wise also to give thanks to Athena, who gave you this talent. Ask pardon of her for the way you've denied her in the past. I'm sure she'll forgive you." But Arachne was furious and almost struck the old woman. "Don't give me any of your stupid advice," she says. "My own advice is all I need." That sounds like Donald Trump again, who says, "You know, I'm like smart.
I have the best words."
God, is it going to be like that for 4 years? He's going to work his way into every. Well, if we leave Inferno and go to the Purgatory and Paradiso, we leave him behind, certainly.
True.
"My own advice is all I need," she says. "Don't think your words have any weight. My mind is unchanged. Why doesn't Athena come herself? Why should she hesitate to match herself with me?" You got that, right? So Athena's in disguise. She says, "Why don't she come herself?" Well, what a setup. So Athena then comes to her full height, throws off her disguise. She rises up in her full glory. "Vain it," she says, which is Latin for "she has come."
And it's a so, cool line.
You have it in Latin now. Vain it.
Vain it.
Vain it. She has come. It's not like I have come, but she has come. Don't worry. And so the weaving match began. And they both set up their looms next to each other. They prepared the wool and got furiously to work. Athena's tapestry depicted the contest between Athena and Poseidon as to who would be the patron goddess of Athens. She won, and so she's doing this picture of her greatest victory. And in the corners of the tapestry, there were miniatures of humans who had been punished for defying the gods. A little message. Arachne's tapestry was a series of pictures of incidents in which the gods had deceived and raped women. That's not tactful, is it? And an interesting detail in connection with Geryon. Round the edge, a narrow band of flowers she designed, flowers and clinging ivy intertwined.
Ooh.
All right. Athena could not deny that the artistry was faultless. But of course, the subject matter was blasphemous, not to say a little tactless. But you see how it had all gone to her head. She thought she could get away with anything. Athena ripped up the tapestry and started beating Arachne. Arachne fled into another room and took a rope and hanged herself. Athena took pity, sort of, on her. I mean, she was talented after all. And Athena bid her live, but in a changed form. She sprinkled her with a hellish drug. And then this is Ovid's account of this. Ovid's metamorphoses are always about, in each story, somebody gets transformed into something else. And in a trice, touched by the bitter lotion, all her hair falls off, and with it go her nose and ears. Her head shrinks tiny. Her whole body's small. Instead of legs, slim fingers line her sides. The rest is belly. Yet from that she sends a fine spun thread, and as a spider, still weaving her web, pursues her former skill. She's become a spider, of course. Of
given
course.
Given her name. Given her name.
Yes, of course. Arachne is Greek for spider. So, you know, if you clued up, it's no surprise, but that's not the point. It's not like a suspense story, after all. What's the point? How does it connect with Geryon? First of all, in the Greek myths, when you are transformed, you're only transformed into a symbol of what you had been before. So, of course, she spun webs, and therefore she becomes a spider. But there's also the sense that a spider spins its web, doesn't leave the web, attracts everybody to the web, and eats them. You see? And so the web becomes this very self-centered thing. It becomes this image in the 18th century. They talk about the spider and the bee. The bee goes out to the flowers and gets all, and turns and makes honey. The spider stays where it is, enclosed, and people come in and it eats them up. And that's what Arachne did. She just sat there and she drew everybody in to admire her good work. Well, it connects with Geryon, too, I suppose, because she was fraudulent. That beautiful facade, but she used it only to draw people to her. And remember last week we said that gifts must be passed on to be kept living and nourishing. But she does not pass her gifts along. Like a spider, she weaves in order to trap others into her own ego profit. So we'll keep one thought for all those fraudsters we'll meet below. We're going to look out for their spider techniques, using their talents for their own ends. But we're talking about weaving, and let's not deny that the work of the weavers is very important to us. We kind of want the work of the weavers. If it wasn't for the weavers, what would they do? They wouldn't have a coat, and neither black nor blue. Again, it wasn't for the work of the weavers. You can what I'm saying? You can what I'm saying, Jimmy?
I can.
Aye, good. That's good. We've now had a Scottish song for Lang Syne here on Evening Under Lamplight. So here's Alex Campbell, the wonderful Alex Campbell, with the work of the weavers. It may sound like we're back with Kipper the Cat with all the crackling on this vinyl recording, but here we go.
We're all met together here to sit and to crack, with our glasses in our hands and our work upon our backs. There's nae a trade among the mock, and neither men nor mack. If it wasn't for the work of the weavers, if it wasn't for the weavers, what would they do? They wouldn't hae clothes made of our woo. They wouldn't hae a coat, neither black nor blue. Gin it wasn't for the work of the weavers. The hireman chills, they mock us, and they crack all about us. They say we're honest faced, and then they mend our boots. But yet for all their mockery, they canna do without us. No, they canna want the work of the weavers. Gin it wasn't for the weavers, what would they do? They wouldn't hae clothes made of our woo. They wouldn't hae a coat, neither black nor blue. Gin it wasn't for the work of the weavers. There's our richts and our slaters and our glaziers and a', our doctors and our ministers and them that live below, and our friends in South America, though them we never saw. But we ken they were the work of the weavers. Gin it wasn't for the weavers, what would they do? They wouldn't hae clothes made of our woo. They wouldn't hae a coat, neither black nor blue. Gin it wasn't for the work of the weavers. There's our sailors and our soldiers, we ken they're all bald. But if they hadn't clothes to wear, they couldn't fecht for cold. The high and low, the rich and poor, all body young and old. They wouldn't want the work of the weavers. If it wasn't for the weavers, what would they do? They wouldn't hae clothes made of our woo. They wouldn't hae a coat, neither black nor blue. Gin it wasn't for the work of the weavers.
Okay, that's enough. You got the point. The work of the weavers is so important. But they do it for other people, unlike Arachne, who does it for her own ego. Okay, that was a silly song, but why not? I'm also going to play the Welly Boot song by Billy Connolly, but I had some trouble getting a copy of it earlier today. So we'll get back to the seriousness of Dante right now, and back to Guérin, La Fiera Pessima, the worst of brutes, presumably the worst thing in the world, this fraud, because it just destroys community. And the thing that Dante is always striving for is community, people coming together. And we find as we go deeper into hell now, down to the people of fraud, everything they do breaks community. In so many different ways, too. Well, anyway, Guérin comes up. Dante goes off alone to observe the usurers who are right there in that spot of hell. We spoke about them last time, and we won't speak about them now. He observes the usurers, comes back to Virgil, who's finished negotiating and is sitting on Guérin's back waiting. He says, now be strong and resolute. Very daunting words. In other words, there's worse things to come. Dante says he started shaking in fright like someone with a severe fever. Virgil puts Dante in front of him to protect him from the sting, and so they're sitting on Guérin's back. And then comes, I think, one of the most amazing descriptions in the whole Inferno, maybe even in all of medieval literature. Guérin, like a boat, backs off from the edge of the cliff and swims through the air. But let's have Dante's words for this passage. Notice how we get this 14th century description of flight. We today all know how a plane circles before landing. Dante didn't, yet he could write this. I'm using Hollander's translation here. I mounted on those huge and ugly shoulders. I wanted to say, though my voice did not come out as I intended, make sure you hold me fast. But he who had helped me many times before in other perils clasped me in his arms and steadied me as soon as I was mounted, then said, Guérin, move on now. Let your circles be wide and your descending slow. Keep in mind your unaccustomed burden. As a bark backs slowly from its mooring, so the beast back off the ledge, and when it felt itself adrift, turned his tail to where his chest had been, and extending it, made it wriggle like an eel's, while with its paws it gathered in the air. Dante is then terrified when he finds himself off the land. Air everywhere around, and all things gone from sight except the beast. On it goes, swimming slowly, slowly, wheeling, descending, but I feel only the wind in my face and blowing from below. I thrust my head forward and dared to look down the abyss. Then I was even more afraid of being dropped, for I saw fire and heard wailing, and so, trembling, I hold on tighter with my legs. And for the first time, I became aware of our descent and wheeling when I saw the torments drawing closer all around me. And Guérin then reaches the bottom, and as soon as they dismount, he shoots off like an arrow. And that's where we'll leave Dante. We only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to share some time with Biff, who doesn't come to the show very often, in fact, never. And
this is my first time.
Your first time, but no, your last, I hope.
No.
No, you come to Cambridge, and you come here on the right kind of Tuesday night. So listen, there's so many things I would want you to talk about, but one is Debt Records, which is a record company, I suppose you'd say.
Well, yes, we're a record label, but not in the traditional sense.
Exactly.
We don't make money, we don't have money, and we don't give money. It's the work of Louis Barabbas, who have you had on the show before?
He hasn't been on the show. He's been on other shows in Cambridge 105. Mm. When he came to play in Cambridge, but
it was set up by myself, Louis, and Dan Watkins, who is now also my business partner in the recording studio that I run. It was set up because we had a community of musicians who didn't really have a platform and we just wanted to provide that platform for them. And over the years, we've had small concerts at venues such as Fuel Cafe in Withington in Manchester, larger events in the Dance House Theatre in Manchester, and we've run stages at festivals, things like that. And basically the idea is just to help musicians, bands, writers to have more exposure without wanting anything from them in return.
But if I want to buy your album, how much does it cost?
Which album?
Doesn't matter. Does it matter?
It's the price is often set by the band, so we haven't got the funds to kind of fund a recording or anything like that, but we help out any way we can, and a lot of the recordings are actually available for free via Bandcamp. If you go to debtrecords.net, we have a link to all of our artists' own websites, and they keep every penny that they make from the recordings. We don't take anything from them.
You see, this ties in with what we did. We should have done this last time about gifts. And as I mentioned a little bit here, that gifts are designed to be given away. And
absolutely.
And this was Lewis Hyde's book called The Gift that inspired Amanda Palmer to do something similar.
Hmm. I think things ought to be given away, especially if you have something that can help someone else in any way.
You see, tie this in, this is the very opposite of fraud.
Yes, but you have to have the opposite to have fraud itself, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's anything wrong with being the opposite of fraud. That's why we have you here, because we like you and you're good.
That's what you think.
Okay, yes,
well, I can see
indeed.
His tail.
Yeah. That's right.
What is this tail?
Listen, I've got two songs here lined up with, like... 5 minutes left, and we could do Year of the Bitch, because it's the end of the year. That's our tribute to the end of the year.
And it has really been the Year of the Bitch this year.
Yeah, but this
it?
Is telling you, watch out for next year.
Yeah, yeah. You think this one was bad?
Do you want to say something about this, the record, or the music?
This is the version from Youth.
I'm almost certain. Yeah. I tried to do that.
This was recorded in a house in Portsmouth. This was Dan and I in one of our earliest incarnations of mobile recording studios, before we had a real static recording studio.
That doesn't mean a mobile phone.
No, absolutely not. No, we had all sorts of equipment, and we were very kindly lent a lovely house in Portsmouth for 3 weeks where we went and recorded this album. And... This song, actually, there's one line that Louis performs whilst gargling water. I'm sure you'll be able to spot it during, but that's one of my favourite moments of his on the record.
And you'll hear Biff on the trombone, which is always a delight in these songs. So let's see what it says for us, and we'll do that and then come back in 2 minutes and 37 seconds or something like that.
The year of the bitch, no one will get lucky, no one will get rich, and we'll all be telling lies when we say we don't know why. We talk about this world as if it's all in bits. Next year, the year of the bitch, the panicking will peak at a piercing pitch, and everyone will hate and obsess about their weight and waste away in want for the things they once ditched. Where were you when we changed our minds, put our ideas on ice, our hearts into brine? Where were you when we fell? Oh, where were you? Next year, the year of the bitch, we'll package up our lives and take them to the tips and sit back in our chairs, assuming fancy airs as it all falls round our ears, drip by drip. Ha, 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 ha. People all just stood around, water in their lawns, tears fell down. I could barely make out the time as the earth
turned to ash and the sea into slime. Where were you when we changed our minds, put our ideals on ice, our hearts into brine? Where were you when we fell? Oh, where were you? Next year, the year of the bitch, we'll swallow all their lies like hungry little chicks. Every constant and vow, rich and rank and foul, we'll cling to every word like tiny little ticks. Where were you when we changed our minds, put our ideals on ice, our hearts into brine? Where were you?
That was Louis Barabbas and the Bedlam Six with Year of the Bitch. I'm sorry, it's sort of not a very encouraging song about what's coming up next year. But what the hell does he know, right? He's just writing a song. It'll be a great year, ladies and gentlemen. Although the next little song, we only have time for a wee bit of this song, but I wanted to play it because we've got Biff's marvelous little playful trombone at the beginning of it. It's called Low. And we'll start that. We won't get all the way through it. And then they're going to blast their way in with a station ident and then the news to tell you everything about the world that's going on. So here is Low. First, I'll say goodbye. And thank you for coming to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, and Andrew Abey.
Goodbye.
And Biff Roxby.
Thank you for having me.
There we are. Okay, well, we all thank you for coming. And here is Low. Pay attention to the trombone.
I was just a child in the drama of the big bad world. A sorry silhouette in the smoke as it curled, existing on the edges of...